Sarah Edmonds, filmmaker, writer, editor, Baltimore, D.C., local, just like myself. And you also run a film magazine. So, Sarah, welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit more about who you are, what you do, what you've been up to.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm actually originally from like the Philadelphia area. I started getting into film when I went to moved to Westminster, Maryland for undergrad, and I got connected with some people in the Baltimore, D.C. indie film area, and really, it caught me. It was wonderful, and I've loved it.
Yeah, the Baltimore area especially. Yeah, all the John Waters stuff and The Wire and then believe it or not, a lot of horror stuff that always makes it to at least Redbox. Or Netflix or Shudder now. I mean, I don't even think there's any Red Boxes now.
But I haven't seen a Red Box in years.
it's all Shudder and Netflix and Hulu. So yeah, all the horror stuff from Baltimore. Yeah. So, you mentioned a little bit offline about filmmakers don't pay attention to literary. You run a filmmaking magazine. Tell me a little more about that and what are you pushing? You mentioned filmmakers need to focus more on literary.
Yeah, I know it sounds really weird, and it's not something I knew about until after I kind of moved out of the area. I'm really involved in literary magazines and the more prose writing than filmmaking at this moment, even though I still do script consulting in that. But yeah, I started out with this blog for Page and Screen, and it was really just meant to kind of document my journey moving through the different types of creative spaces and kind of give people pointers of things that I've learned as a writer making films and as a filmmaker writing, because those two circles, people from both circles want to be involved, but they don't really communicate much, which is right. Something I think is really strange. And some friends and I have started this magazine, which features short stories, short scripts, and short films. And a lot of literary magazines want films. They want multimedia presentations and scripts. And as a filmmaker, and most of my friends in filmmaking don't really know about that, which I think is strange and unfortunate, because I'm all about accessibility in the industry. I want as many people as possible to be able to share their stories and their voices. And I know festival circuits can be expensive. They have limits, production deadlines, all of that. And so films will age out. People who make films on low budgets won't have the money to go through the full festival circuit. But if you look at literary magazines, there are no restrictions on when it was made. There's very infrequently premiere requirements. Most literary magazines just want that it's not available online. But if you could have shown something at like seven different festivals, and they'll still accept the film as part of their magazine. So it's usually a free way for people to get their films out there, and people just don't know about it. And especially with magazines that are themed, like there's so many horror magazines or historical fiction or romance, and you can send your film to that, and it's directly to the audience you're trying to reach. You are having these people who will market your film for you. They'll put it out for you directly to your audience. And it's a wonderful opportunity, especially for people who are just starting out or people who have old projects that have kind of fallen by the wayside that are still important and still valuable, but aren't really being shown. So it's something that it is competitive. It has to be selected and submitted and vetted. So it has a little more of that credibility than just putting it up online, but it's not as restrictive and not as inaccessible as festivals.
Right. Yeah, I know. I've budgeted a bunch of short films or indie films that I've produced or AD'd, or I'm prepping as a writer director, and I always have the film festivals, each individual ones that I've even selected. I foresee what's coming out. You know, if we complete this film by May, I know what film festivals are, and you know, we complete editing and post-production and all that, but in May or June, I know what film festivals to submit it to starting August and then into the new year. And then as these films are delayed and we still haven't produced this, I'll just update that budget And I'll update each film festival, and I have to add each. I'll spend like, 3-4 hours just researching the film festivals that will be, so on and so forth. And that's always in the budget, but that ramps up the budget probably a good $2,000-$3,000 just for the submission fees. And luckily with today's technology, they're taking digital downloads, or they could even take straight from YouTube or Vimeo or whatever. But as far as marketing goes, you're like you mentioned a funny, you mentioned the way you worded it, writers making films or filmmakers writing. And for me, my biggest hiccup has been marketing and social media marketing and promotion and that stuff. And what do I write? How do I write it? What's the hashtags? What's the description? Do I have to blog about my own thing? I mean, here's the things, hopefully people see it, but then you have to like promote the thing and make posts about it or whatever the case may be. And it's such a hassle, and it's additional work as a filmmaker or now we're called content creators, depending on what platform you're on. I remember years ago, I used to read some literary magazines like Fangoria or Hollywood Reporter or Variety. I would read them as it got into the digital age, and you would get an email version of it. And that's just happens to be the time I kind of once I graduated college, got a job at Discovery Channel, and then I was following, the news or whatever, and reading up on these things, and kind of touching upon your literary magazine. It's a lot like the Variety. It's a lot like Hollywood Reporter, where it's pushing these ultra independent films out, whatever they may be, or local films. But that's just been. It speaks to me because there's a way for me to brag about a web series I'm making or some, digital documentary. I mean, still in my career, most of my work is YouTube based. It's super independent. It's all web series. It's all new media web content. And I certainly hope to push past that, but definitely for me, but like you were saying, festivals are tedious. And even before it was, you got to get your package together, some posters. If you get accepted and you're going to go to that festival, still you have to have a physical poster, maybe some flyers, some 8x10s or whatever they're called, and cards, business cards, DVDs,
I can't tell you how many different versions of a business card I've printed throughout the years, just as things update and things change. But yeah, I definitely think more filmmakers can make use of literary magazines, because just from the magazine perspective, like, we want films, we want multimedia. And I can tell you, the one that we're doing now, we've been getting submissions for about 5 months at this point, and we only have short stories. No one submitted scripts, no one submitted films. And it's disappointing, because like, I've reached out to filmmakers and I've reached out to my undergrad film program, and even on social media, like, I like to think I have a fairly decent social media presence, and I have filmmakers on there. I've done script consulting work for filmmakers on there, and still, like, filmmakers don't utilize that. And I think it has a lot to do with something, going back to like that dichotomy of writers making films and filmmakers writing. Mm-hmm. A lot of filmmakers don't consider themselves writers. Like, I actually interviewed a former boss of mine. He works at a public broadcast station, and he does a lot of writing on the side, his own script writing. He does creative writing with friends, but he doesn't consider himself a writer. And this was for a class project, so that was the whole point of our conversation when I was interviewing him. And it was really interesting to me, because his job at this television station is to work with clients to translate what they want into scripts and then into like production. So his actual job is literally writing, but he doesn't see himself as a writer. And I think it's a shame, because there's this idea in filmmaking that the audience is the final viewing audience. Mm-hmm. But when you're writing scripts, your audience is the production crew, your audience are the producers, the directors. And I think the fact that we don't, as a community, don't often see it that way, makes people think that the writing isn't as I don't know how to word it, like, because it has writing as it is. That doesn't make any sense, but you know what I mean.
And you raise a good point. You know, I would go see a movie. Me and my buddies, we went and saw Swingers in the theater, 1996. And I'm always talking about this movie, but we would come out. The final audience is the audience, right? Watching the movie. And we would come out and we would be quoting the movie. We'd be reenacting the scenes. So, you know, kind of what to what you're saying, the writer has an audience of the director, the producers, the actors. The actors are reading that writing and they're reenacting it during the production. They're quoting this writer's, you know, Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn, they're on set in that diner reenacting the writer's script. And then we see that and we're reenacting their performance. And so you're right. I mean, in such a way, the cast and the crew are the audience for that screenplay or that teleplay or that stage play.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, this is just my little thing. I really wish that more screenwriters would take themselves as writers because it is its own craft. And I know from working with writers who don't do film, they all want to write scripts, but there's a whole different skill set you need to do that. And especially different kinds of scripts for different formats and different lengths of productions. And I think that if more script writers saw themselves as writers, we would be able to kind of open up discussions between the two, because I know I'm recently just finished an MFA, a Fine Art Creative Writing program. And as I was looking for schools, very few of them incorporate script writing into their creative writing programs. And most of them won't accept scripts as submissions when you're applying, which was a learning curve for me. I had to write a short story and I had not written short stories in years. But I think it's a shame because so many writers want to write scripts, but they're just not equipped for it. And I think if we open the discussions between the two, it would offer a chance for more people to understand what goes into the work, understand the skill set that goes into it and appreciate the skill set, and also allow more people to find more forms and ways to express their stories.
I mean, it is writing. But you know, again, there's a lot of authors write their books differently, and some, you know, some authors would even be honest with their grammatical error, maybe not grammatical errors, but with their way of writing. You know, like one, you know, you'd have a historical autobiography written completely different than the way maybe Stephen King would write it, because he's speaking from the point of view of some middle-class white kid from Maine. But then a historical autobiography is written very, more professionally, if that's or, you know, Stephen Ambrose, you know, book Band of Brothers is written more professionally because it's a historical document on the Band of Brothers, who's at the Big Red One or whoever, but the First Battalion. But writing screenplays, and even more so, there's the whole formatting to screenplays. You know, it's a page a minute. You have your title header, you have your general header, you have your general body, you have your action body, you have your, you know, character and dialogue, and then that's in the middle, and all that formatting that goes into that, and trying to still remain creative and tell a story within these parameters that it would be then turned into a film. Because you could look at it and you could probably make a 14-hour miniseries, or you can make 2 2-hour movies from just one novel, it. But by breaking it down and writing it and then being crafty and artistic and creative and sacrificing some stuff and changing some things. Now everyone's like, oh, it's so much different from the book. I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's different from the book because shit, we're going to make it and it's going to be a 20-hour miniseries. It's going to be longer than Roots. But we made it 2 2-hour movies, or they did, I think, you know, the one with John Ritter.
Yeah.
And Steve Curry was, Tim Curry, I'm sorry, was three two-hour episodes. It was a miniseries.
So. Yeah.
I think it was two or three parts, you know, three nights or whatever. So it was either a 6-hour version or a 2-hour version. But you, if you're going to go freaking page by page and put it in a screenplay, it's going to be 20 hours long or whatever the hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's that craft and there's that, you know, it's not just open writing. It's not just creative writing. It's very formatted with all that other stuff involved.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I know I had the same experience when I was writing my first submission piece to MFA programs. I didn't know what I wanted to write as far as a short story version. So I took one of my screenplays, that's a 100-page screenplay, like full film, and turned it into an 11-page short story. And I'm like, I just imagine the reverse. Like if this was a full book, like half an hour.
What was the screenplay length?
It was 100-page screenplay.
And turned into a 11-page short story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, if I were to turn that around, imagine that being a 100-page book, that would be like a 1,000-page screenplay. That would be insane. And I really think that I feel like this is me not doing any research, but I feel like there are so many writers who want to write screenplays and they just can't succeed, because when you write, you're looking for all of this detail and all of this expression and your specific writing style, as you were saying, and that just doesn't translate into the craft. Like, you can have your own style as a screenwriter, but it can't be that, unless you're someone super famous or you can fund your own films, like, it can't be that super stylized or it won't sell. And I know just from the few other writers I've talked to who want to write movies, their ideas, they're like, oh, I think this would translate really well to film. And it's a whole novel idea. And I'm like, that's not going to work out because it's just too much. You can't fit all of that in there. And usually they're all of these pieces that are very internal conflict driven, very emotional. And I'm like, there are some wonderful films that can be made that way. But you have to be extremely skilled to write something successful that deals with internal conflict almost exclusively, because you need something on screen to keep the viewer engaged. And that's another huge difference in writing for the page or writing for screen, because you can delve into internal thoughts on the page, but unless you want to narrate your whole film,
it's not going to work. and so there you go. Again, let's go back to Stephen King, whose books speak from the point of view of the main character, or there's, you know, all this, you know, the main character, he writes it as if the main character's talking to us, the reader. So that's going to be narration. That's going to be voiceover. That's going to be pages upon, that's going to be 30, 40 extra pages of just this, you know, like with the character's name, parentheses, VO, and it's just dialogue and then some action, dialogue.
Yeah, no one wants to see that. Like, no one wants to make that film.
Yeah. And so, you know, I just watched, you know, about 6 months ago, just watched The Outsider, Stephen King's The Outsider on HBO. And it was, from what I understand, it was just one book, and it was a whole one season series on HBO because, you know, they wanted to do it right. They wanted to keep the character elements. They wanted to keep all the characters mentioned in the book. They wanted to keep all the situations. And it was, I think it was 8 episodes, an hour each. So that's 8 hours. That's longer than the TV miniseries version of it. I don't even think The Outsider was as long or as grandiose of a book as it. I don't think it was as many pages as it. And I mean, yeah. And so then you have to look at like the length of the novel and so on. But yeah, I'm, you know, going back, you know, 2020 versus 2021. Before we get to that, and I'm kind of excited that your literary magazine accepts short stories, because for me, going back to 2020, I had a lot of screenplays that I was just about to pull off, and then it was, oh shit, you know, quarantine, lockdown, can't produce much.
Yeah, I had one of those too.
So I was considering rewriting them as short story or novella or whatever, self-submitting through self-publishing through Amazon. Yeah. And so that's another tool. I wouldn't be so upset with your magazine only getting short stories, because maybe there are filmmakers that are submitting these short stories in hopes that, you know, people like them to get some press. Okay, I'm going to turn it into a short film. Because the short story got so much press here on this magazine and this site and this group and this festival and da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Now here's a short story. Let me get some, you know, investors or some Patreon investors, some crowdfunding investors. Mm-hmm. Because, hey, listen, the short story did so well, you know, in this literary magazine. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great opportunity. And I might, I have some screenplays I'm definitely going to send to you probably in an hour and a half once this ep's done. But
fantastic.
Absolutely. But I, for me, that's definitely like, what are the different kind of ways to get my ideas out there, even though all I've done is write. And mm-hmm. going back to your buddy, I'm not a writer. What was he saying he was? A filmmaker?
Oh yeah, just a filmmaker and kind yeah. of like, I think producer is kind of like his role at okay. the station. So he was definitely seeing himself more as filmmaker, kind of just a production body, someone who contributes to the production rather than someone who helps formulate it and create it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get that, you know, I got a lot of, you know, colleagues and family members, you know, that start giving me all sorts of titles. I'm like, you know, keep it simple. I'm a filmmaker because yes, I am a writer. But to get my stuff done, I write in such a way that, you know, these can be like ultra, ultra, ultra low budget web series, new media content on my YouTube channel. But I'm also shooting it. I'm directing it. I'm producing it with what money I have just immediately in my pocket. I'm producing it, financing it, editing it,
yeah.
and distributing it on my YouTube channel. So. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times I'm acting, I act in a whole bunch of stuff, but then I also, you know, I'm an AD, I'm a production coordinator, producer, director, AD, definitely not anything that deals with electricity because I'm not certified and yeah. definitely not the director of photography because I don't know the science, but mm-hmm. camera operator, focus puller, dolly pusher. Been a PA a number of times, but crew wise my biggest thing is directing, ADing, producing, production department, director department, but then a lot of acting.
Yeah.
And so when people are like, what the hell, with and you look at my IMDb, I'm just a filmmaker because I make films, whether I'm in front of the camera or behind it, I'm a filmmaker. I make, I guess now shit with YouTube, it's content creator, but now that I'm a podcaster, I guess it's just content creator. But yeah. So I get that because, you know, when I'm 60, I just want to be writing. I want to retire. I want to write scripts, sell scripts. I would love to just be a writer.
Oh my gosh, that would be the dream.
work from home, full-time dad, part-time screenwriter, selling scripts. And that sort of thing, because I was 40 when my kid was born. So if I'm going to retire, it's probably going to be before the kid, you know, the usual age of retirement. It's going to be before the kid's out of high school.
Yeah.
And dad's retired already. What the heck? I'm like, yeah. I had you late. Your wife, your wife was younger than me. So your wife, my wife, you know, your mother was younger than me, but I had you late. So, you know, I'm retiring. The kid's still in high school. So that's like kind of the goal is to, you know, be in films and make a name for myself and then be like, hey, listen, I got all these screenplays. Mm-hmm. I'll email them to you. I'm working from home for the rest of my life.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So, you know, as I was going to tell you before, or I was going to ask you, you know, mm-hmm. before, you know, 2020 versus 2021, what projects had you had, you know, ready to go and then they got shit canned or whatever, and versus 2021.
Yeah, I had two main projects that we were in different stages with. One was a short film that I was actually in the middle of working on. It was supposed to be like a 10-minute short film. We have 8 minutes of footage, and it will never be finished because we had started filming. It was super. It's literally me and the actress, and that was it for the majority of the film. Then we had one final crowd shot. It was our only exterior shot. It was supposed to be like this really tight-knit thing. We were filming in my apartment in Maryland. And then with the pandemic, and I ended up moving out of that apartment, so we don't have access to it anymore. And we all look different now. Like, the actress completely had long hair now. Now she's almost shaved her head. And like, so it's just never going to happen, which is a shame because I really enjoyed that film. I'm kind of like, we'll have to refilm it somewhere else eventually. Because, and that's the type of thing where I wouldn't turn it into a short story, because the whole point of that film was you don't quite know what's going on until the end. So short story, it'd be really hard to hide that much from the reader through the whole thing. But okay, at least in the way that I would write it, I guess. But the other project I had was co-writer, and I was going to be doing the makeup for another friend of mine was directing, and we had the whole crew put together. We were in the process of looking for a set, and then everything happened. Everybody's kind of scattered now, and it's probably not going to happen, or if it happens, someone else will probably have to do the makeup, but I still contributed to the script. So two projects that have kind of been canned, but a lot's happened since. And like, I've been writing since, I've written two books since the pandemic started. I'm in the process of editing those, about to query them. I have a few scripts on the back burner that I'm writing. I haven't been doing too much script writing, unfortunately, just because of other projects. I went back to school, so I have one more year of school, grad school left right now. But yeah, I've been doing some informal script consulting, just kind of people reaching out saying, hey, can you look this over? Not really like charging people for it, because I'm like, what else am I doing right now? I might as well. Some editing when I can edit from home, you know, editing together all the Zoom videos so they look decent. It's fun trying to get people to frame themselves in Zoom. That's been a time. But yeah, I pretty much just kind of reserve myself for writing and editing at the moment through the whole pandemic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that was the big thing. And going back to your short film. So I shot a short, a super short, like probably a 10-minute short. Mm-hmm. What the hell year was this? 2018? Maybe early 2018, winter of 2018, maybe. Maybe it was even 2017. And it just took me forever to get around to syncing the footage and because there was a whole lot of problems on set, but we were shooting with a Red, right? And had a number of crew members, and I paid them some money. I think the whole thing cost out of pocket cost me $600. Oh. Mm-hmm. And so then it was like, okay, we shot everything in a 3-day weekend, and then, okay, here's my shot missing list. Mm-hmm. Right. And I had all that. And then two of the cars that I needed, one wasn't available, and I sold the other one.
Oh no.
Okay. How am I going to get this white SUV? How am I going to get another, I think it was a white Yaris. Mm-hmm. So then during the pandemic, what I started looking into is trying to create motion comics. Okay. And that's kind of like this thing on YouTube, if you look up motion comics. Mm-hmm. And so even though this thing cost me $600 and we even shot it with a Red and we had actors, I'm just going to pull stills, mm-hmm, and make a motion comic and do a lot of stuff in After Effects. And I can just Google a picture of a white GMC Envoy, and I can Google a picture of a white 2015 Yaris. Mm-hmm. And I can play around with some effects in After Effects, and make each scene kind of like this motion comic panel that, you know, kind of flips into another panel, just like comics have like all these different panels. Mm-hmm. And so as far as your short, you know, you could probably still finish it, and just, but since it's what, 2 years later, mm-hmm, to make it match, you could just do some Photoshop. You could finish it. You could just finish it with still pictures of this actress, put on a wig, Photoshop some stuff. Mm-hmm. Could be in another apartment. But if you add this comic kind of sketch comic effect to each panel, and then do Ken Burns kind of zoom in, zoom out, or whatever, mm-hmm, and make this motion comic. And that's been my goal. You know, I'm on an extended gig here, kind of semi out of state, mm-hmm, but I've been working on the podcast. in my downtime, and I've been working on some of these little side projects, especially this motion comic, two motion comics, in my downtime. And I'm trying to experiment, and so I have all this footage shot, but I have so many missing scenes. How am I going to pull this off? How am I going to make it work? It's like, screw it, just make it a motion comic, because I want to get the thing out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I'll even submit the screenplay to your literary magazine to get the script out there.
Yeah.
And see, get people to see it. Mm-hmm. Because another thing that has been kind of, it was cool when, you know, anthology horror films, yeah. VHS is like three or four shorts. Mm-hmm. Within an hour and a half block, you got VHS, you've got Book of Blood. But back in the day, every once in a while, Creep Show would come out. Mm-hmm. Tales from the Dark Side, Tales from the Hood, these anthology films. It was a 90-minute film, but it consisted of like three or four shorts. And every once in a while, somebody would pull up. What was that movie? What was that movie with Tim Roth? Tarantino was involved with it, like Four Rooms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Four short stories directed by written and directed by four different filmmakers, all starring Tim Roth as his bellboy, bellhop mm-hmm. at a hotel. But that's, and then they're kind of, and then they're even kind of playing off on the anthology film, but it's all with the same guy and so on and so forth. So I have a number of shorts that I want to make into an anthology film. And okay. I sent like the full script consisting of these four shorts, you know, to a number of people, but still you got to put some kind of marketing and get some other kind of buzz and be like, hey guys, listen, I'm getting buzz on one of the scripts or all the scripts. Mm-hmm. I made motion comics on them. The scripts were in a literary magazine and got some buzz or so on and so forth. And that's kind of a general plan. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, for your short motion, just turn it into a motion comic, and I can send you a couple of examples that are on online, but you can easily pull, you know, the best still that captures that moment in that shot or that scene in that cut, mm-hmm. and you just pull a still from it.
Yeah.
And it's like the perfect look, you know, like if they're pulling a gun out and they're like that, mm-hmm. and that's instead of like the whole action, that's like that panel of the comic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've honestly never heard of motion comics like that, which is weird because like I'm huge like graphic novel person, like not so much American comics, but like I read manga like crazy, attempt to write comics. It's my fake way of storyboarding. I'm like, I can't storyboard, but I can write a comic. I don't know how that makes sense, but it does. But yeah, I've never heard of that. That's like really interesting. I'll definitely look into it because like we have most of the footage. I even made a trailer for this thing, but it just never came to, but it'll be good to use.
So have you ever read the original graphic novel of The Watchmen?
I haven't. I think I started it like back in high school. And
okay. So long story short, right? So in The Watchmen, mm-hmm. since superheroes are real, what are the comics about? So the comics, there was a comic called The Black Mass or the Black Plague or something like that. It was about this pirate ship. Mm-hmm. And so in The Watchmen, one of the characters, I don't know if it was Rorschach or one of the other guys, probably Rorschach, was reading a comic about this pirate that gets shipwrecked. So when Zack Snyder made the movie, mm-hmm. he made The Watchmen, and then there was these segments that followed this pirate. And it was and they were animated motion comics within that theatrical mm-hmm. movie.
That's cool.
But Warner Brothers said, get rid of all that. And so Zack Snyder cut out all of this, oh God, Curse of the Black Mass or something. Now it's going to piss me off because this was the first. So then he released it as a special on the DVD. And then it was released, I think, on YouTube. And that was that was the first time I saw what was considered a motion comic. And then motion comics started becoming semi-regular. Mm-hmm. And then this video game, this mobile game I play, Marvel Contest of Champions, is always releasing a motion comic about like the new characters that are available to use on the game, and you can, you know, whatever. And it's now, so if you were to Google motion comic, mm-hmm. Superman Red Sun is a motion comic where Superman landed in Russia instead of Smallville. And he was raised by, you know, communist Russians, and he was turned into a, you know, like the president of Russia, the commandant, the super weapon president commandant of Russia. And so, you know, a number of different motion you could just go on YouTube, motion comics, something, a lot of them pop up. And that's going to be my next thing for the next year, because it's just, it's all been virtual since April 2020. It's all been virtual remote work. So I might as well start experimenting, see what kind of tools I can use. And even more so going back, I don't know if, have you ever heard of Red versus Blue? It was a web series called Red versus Blue.
I don't think so. No.
So this is old. Now this goes back to 06 or 07 and a bunch of guys got on Halo online and did a bunch of funny stuff with Halo. Like they would look up and down to nod. They would look left and right to shake their head no. And so there was a director, you know, what do you call it? Spectating, right? And he would say, hey, you know, player one, player seven, player nine, do this, jump over this, shoot this guy, and they were he was recording all this stuff, and you can record the gameplay, and then they would do voiceover work, and they released it as a web series called Red versus Blue, just using gameplay of Halo. And cool. so there's other games you can mod, you know, there's all these online open world, these online open world video games, you know, Call of Duty or whatever, Destiny or whatever these games are. And you can, you know, kind of, you can modify your character for specific looks, and you can have people do other stuff. And now they're recording that. And then you can even alter that and then make, maybe even make a motion comic by taking stills from that and then alter it even more so in After Effects, Photoshop, so on and so forth. So I mean, there's definitely like these cool ways of, you know, using other tools that are available virtually, remotely, even free, and the only thing you're spending is your time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's, if anything good has come out of like this whole situation as far as like filmmakers go, it's opened new avenues. Like everybody's looking for new ways to remotely make films, looking for new ways to make things on their own and without spending money for those locations or the big, all the cast and crew. And I think that's really great. Just having ways to open up new doors, especially for like indie filmmakers. And I think it's one of the great things about indie filmmakers in general is just like innovative and finding new avenues to make it work no matter what. And I think this has definitely been a test of that.
You know, my biggest thing is I want to get my ideas and my stories out there. I want people, you know, to see it and, you know, entertain somehow in some way. And if it's shoddy, you know, so be it. But, you know, I mention this documentary all the time, but I think it's called the Go-Go Boys about Golan and Globus, Canon Films. You know, they made all those 80s action B movies in the 80s, Bloodsport and all the Chuck Norris movies, all the Van Damme movies. And they said, you know, just do it. I mean, like the script's not even finished, or the script sucks. Just make the film anyway. Just finish it. We're running out of money. All right, we'll find a way to, like, you know, cut corners and finish the film, but just make the film anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's like a thing in any creative field, honestly. It doesn't, not to say it doesn't matter how good it is, because like sometimes it does, but like it just matters that you do it. It matters that you get it out there. It matters that you see it to the end, because that's the difference between the people who create and the people who dream of creating. Like you can have all the best ideas in the world, but if you don't go out and do it, it doesn't matter. So just getting out there and getting it done is really the most important part.
There's nothing wrong with dreams, but you have to wake up and go do it.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So let's go to 2021. Have you been back on set, back in the field, back in the studio?
Not so much so.
No.
Yeah, not so much so. Honestly, I've just been like completely derailed by school at the moment, which kind of sounds like a cop out, but I've been doing, in the time at school, like I've been doing a lot of different non-creative works. Like I work for an international public health organization. I work for a law firm at the moment, just like a bunch of part-time side jobs to fill while I'm at school. So I also, with being at school, I'm not in Maryland at the moment. I'm in Pennsylvania, so all of my
Okay.
connections are in Maryland. So kind of like I see you from afar and I miss you, but haven't really had the time to go down and work on anything, unfortunately. But I'm definitely looking to, and the magazine is kind of like my hopeful gateway into that is just connecting with more filmmakers, making broader connections, and getting back involved with the film world. And the only thing film related that really happened is one of my short films recently finished showing at the Flick Fair On Demand Film Festival. They had surprised me. I got an email one day back in August. They had seen the film when it had shown in 2019 in at a film festival in Oklahoma, the Bare Bones Film Festival, and they were reaching out asking to stream it as part of their September showing.
Oh,
So
yeah.
that was cool and unexpected because it was made in 2018. So I had kind of stopped showing at festivals. So I'm like, that's like 3 years ago, pretty much. There are limits. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of done, run its course. So that was nice getting that back out there. I'm like, cool, unexpected. But that's the only film thing related to my own work that's really happened lately.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's fantastic. And it's also there's times where I'll get a notification from IMDb that, a credit was added to your name. And I'll look at it and I'm like, this shit's like from 5 years ago. That's awesome. Or someone would hit me up. There was something I did back in like 2010, and I think it was, and I left it alone. Oh, so there was something we produced in 2010. I submitted to a whole bunch of stuff. Then I disappeared for 6 months, went to basic training and MP school, and then came home on leave. And then someone sent me an email saying we it was while I was gone, it was screened on Spike TV for their Halloween,
Oh, cool.
showcase, and they showed music videos, they showed shorts. And mine, this thing, Something Wicked, was it was like, Thriller, where it was a music video within, slightly longer short film. We wanted to kind of go that Thriller route, where the extended version of Thriller, I think, is a 12-minute short film. I think ours was 8 with a four minute track in there, and we had a lot of fun with it. But I'm like, oh, of course, when I'm gone, that's when this thing gets showcased. and
Of course.
and and then yeah, so I mean, it's just great to get like those kind of hits just out of nowhere, and it reminds you like this is why I'm doing it. And all you need, and so that's why I keep telling people like don't quit on your dream, keep persevering, keep pushing forward to it. Like my acting career started with too many blank spots in my schedule. And so with my military background, my military police background, I started submitting to law enforcement military roles, and I just submitted, submitted, submitted. And I got a hit. Someone said, hey, it's like $100 a day for 2 days.
Nice.
You're just a cop. It's like, and they called it an extra role. Like you're gonna be an extra. So then they shoot the scene and they're shooting me. And I'm like, oh, okay. So maybe it's like a featured extra, but that's fine. Then I see the episode come out and it's like a good 7-minute close up of me. And of course, there's no dialogue. They kind of drop the dialogue of my scene, and they have like there's a voiceover because it's one of those crime shows, those ID crime shows. But there's like a good 5 minutes of a close up of my face on, national television. So then there's that kind of little bit of endorphin high. And then it was like, okay, start submitting to twice as many gigs and pinpoint law enforcement military roles. And then it was just gig after gig after gig after gig. And then it was like some other side stuff. So like when that one little thing, like, oh man, this film I did 3 years ago got selected. Keep making films, keep making films, keep making films, keep making films.
Exactly. No, I definitely had an experience. The first film that I ever showed at a festival, it was like the second film I had ever made, was this 30-minute long monster movie. And I do not show it. It's terrible because I feed into that. Like I don't show that film to people anymore. It is on YouTube. I'm not telling you the name. It's kind of bad. But it was the first film that I really like invested money into. Like I paid an animator. The animation is fantastic. Like Julian Robinson was the animator. He was wonderful to work with. And it was really great because he was a professional in the industry. And I was like, I'm starting out. I don't really know what I'm doing. So he was super helpful there. And it showed at the Bare Bones International Film Festival, which is the first one I ever went to down in Oklahoma. And we watched the screening. I went with my mom because it was like, I don't know how old I was. I think it was like 19 or 20, something like that. And it was cute. And we stayed for the weekend. The awards ceremony was the one night we took pictures in front of their little backboard. And then we're kind of like, do we want to go in and sit there? Do we not? What do we want to do? We ended up going to a bar and getting dinner. And because I'm like, yeah, it's whatever. It's my first film. It's not going to win anything. Like we had seen a few of the other student horror movies. I'm like, okay, whatever. We ended up winning two awards that night. And I found out after the fact because we didn't go to the awards ceremony because I'm like, oh, it's not going to win anything. We won the best in the student horror category and we won best poster, which that I would expect because the guy who did our poster, Sean Elmore, he and I went to high school together. He does album artwork for like MTV and Madonna and Miley Cyrus and all that now. So, like, that I would expect because he's an amazing artist. But when I found out it won like the best in its category, I'm like, what? I was so confused. It was so unexpected. But it was kind of that thing where like I dismissed it myself. And then other people received it a lot better than I expected them to. And so like ever since then, that's kind of been my policy is like you can't self-reject yourself. You have to believe in your work and you have to take your own work seriously because you never know who else will. And I think creative people in general have that tendency to joke about their own work and to be kind of flippant about it because if other people don't react to it well, or if other people don't take it seriously, then if you're playing it off as a joke, then it doesn't really matter. But if you take your own work seriously, that's only going to make other people take it seriously as well. So I'm like, just go for it. You never know what'll happen. You might win awards when you're like at a bar with an Elvis impersonator. You never know.
You know, I always think of I don't know if you ever watched The Office as religiously or as many times around as I have.
I've
But
seen like two episodes, so probably not.
no, so Michael Scott, you know, wanted to make this film, and within the storyline of the show, it took him 10 minutes to make this film. And he tried to screen it, you know, in a little office meeting. He tried to screen it to, you know, the people at the office, and they started laughing at stuff. And he got upset and stormed out, pulled the DVD out, stormed out. And so Jim was like, "You need to accept this as it is. It took you 10, it took you 10 years to make it, and you finished it. Show us the film." And so the problem is, you know, Michael Scott always wants to be this funny guy in the office and make people laugh. And they think he's offensive and inappropriate. But now here's something that is making people hysterically laugh, and you have an issue with it. So he showed it again, and he let the whole office watch it, and they were like hysterically bawling their eyes out from laughing. And he realized, I made a comedy. I made a hilarious comedy. And you know, you know, if you ever watch what the hell was that stupid movie called? Countdown to Midnight or something like that, you know, and it's just got so many tropes in it, and it's, you know, so goofball. And but again, you know, like I make something and it's just freaking ridiculous. I accept that. You know, I was trying to make a horror and it turned into like this farce comedy, low budget, and it's actually, you know, so much like the C horror movies that I used to watch on Channel 50 in the 80s. And you know, you realize there's something here that it wasn't what I expected, but I pulled the trigger on it from beginning to end, completed it, and now I have something else. And that some might say That is a failure of vision and a failure of direction. Sure, but it's also a success of creativity and production. Mm-hmm. And actually like just completing the thing. And, you know, there was an instance where, you know, a colleague of mine, there's two guys I work with all the time. They're both musicians, actors, you know, creatives. One of them was running this sales business, and he had some product that he wanted to make, like these goofy viral video commercials for a couple of products. And so no money, just a cell phone. And we made it bad and it came out bad, but it came out good. Because, mm-hmm. You know, one was for this enriched spring water. And so I did this whole bit kind of like, you know, these washed up actors that try to sell life insurance. You know, these washed up actors that try to sell life insurance or that are working for, like trying to do a lawyer commercial. So that's what I did. And then we did another one, which was just this sporadic, ridiculous protein shake and energy drink in one infomercial with the other colleague, who's just this insane, you know, another musician, rapper, and actor, but you know, you get them amped up, and we just made these things bad on purpose, and they came out great because it's like, we got no money. I'm not going to sit here and try to, you know, pre-produce this thing for a month. We're just jump in, and I had my buddy in the back, you know, reading scripts, you know, reading notes, and he would you know, just repeat it, but. Yeah. But he didn't want to come off like he's repeating it. So he's overacting to make up for the fact that he's just repeating somebody's notes. And then it's just coming out great. And we're and I'm telling him to, like, okay, drink the protein shake. And he drinks it and, like, okay, now lift the kettlebells. And he starts lifting the kettlebells. Like, all right, put them down again and just take protein in your mouth. And it's so terribly done. Mm-hmm. When you get to the editing table, that's when you can kind of play around, because you know how they make, you know that terrible phrase on set, we'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
So yes and no. A lot of stuff was fixed in post. A lot of stuff was experimented with in post, but we knew that going in.
Yeah.
Because at some point you have to just make something. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you have to make something.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I had a similar experience. I did, like, first through undergrad, there were class that I had an internship with this company. I don't think they're in business anymore, but they were basically marketing content creation. That was what they did. And I just happened to be assigned them as my company because I had film experience. That was what they did. So I'm like, okay. And we had to make commercials for these companies we were interning with. And I was just kind of like, their whole thing is making commercials. Like, they have all this equipment, they have all this experience. I'm not going to be able to make a commercial for them that meets the standard of what they're creating in like a week. That's not going to happen. So I just went around and we were just joking around because they were the nicest people. They would just joke and laugh around. So also getting them to be on task and make something serious would have been its own trial. Mm-hmm. But so I just filmed joking around and like slamming doors in people's faces, just like laughing it off. And we made kind of like an anti-commercial and just played up the sarcasm, played things backwards, edited it all together. So it made them seem like jerks, even though they weren't. It was obviously funny. And my teacher was kind of like, do you really think this would work for like a serious marketing company? And I'm like, if you meet them, it's them. It's like more honest to who they are. And if you look at their portfolio, and like we had clips of their work that shows that they put quality work, but I'm like, I know my own ability in this time span isn't going to measure up to that. So I'm going to do something that's going to catch your attention, that's going to make you laugh and make you remember them. And even if it's not the most serious thing, that still accomplishes that. And it still achieves that marketability that they want.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, kind of just thinking outside the box, experimenting, what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention. You know, so you know, you have a lot of situations where it's like, I don't know how the hell we're going to pull this off, and you just sit back, you kind of like step away from it, and you're like, holy shit, I got it.
Yes.
And it's just gonna, it's gonna be shit, but it's gonna be hilarious. You know, like, you know, it's just going back to, you know, I've had friends in college that gave me such a hard time about my choice in movies. I've seen all the big blockbusters. I go to the theater and I see all the big blockbusters. Now I want to go see some bizarre random shit that's straight to tape, the B movies. Yes. And you get some gems out of those B movies. And now looking back at it, I mean, the best of the best with Eric Roberts, or The Blood of Heroes with Rutger Hauer. They gave me The Boondock Saints was straight to video for, you know, for some you know, political reasons. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever heard of it, but it was straight to video. And now all of a sudden it's a cult classic. Here we are, you know, 99 that came out. And I was, what was I doing? I was calling people on the phone back in 99. I was calling people on a landline. Dude, you got to check out Boondock Saints. There's probably only two copies at your Blockbuster, but you got to find it. All of a sudden it's a cult classic with a sequel that wasn't even as good.
Never.
Some people say it wasn't that good. I liked the sequel, and I hope they make a third. But going back to you know, those B movies made Van Damme an international superstar, you know, in the 80s. And you know, now Chuck Norris is a meme, you know. You know, like the latest Chuck Norris joke I heard was, Chuck Norris went to college and moved out of his house, and he turned to his dad and said, now you're the man of the house. Right? But like, yeah, these terrible B movies from the 80s, and Chuck Norris is now like a legend. So you know, I know what it was. So there was this movie called, they gave me a rash of shit for this movie that I rented, and they just left, and they're like, we're not finishing this. We're gonna watch Half Baked for the 20th time. We're not gonna watch this movie. But the movie was called When Strangers Appear.
Okay.
And I wish I could remember the actors that were in it. Their names are on the tip of my tongue. I don't know if you ever seen Pitch Black.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the woman that was in Pitch Black working alongside the two people from Pitch Black. The pilot that was on the white pilot that was on drugs, and the white woman that was working with Vin Diesel. Okay. They were both in this movie. And then the guy, I don't know if you ever seen Boogeyman, this guy, it was the older brother from Seventh Heaven. He was in it. And it's like, you know, no, back in 2001, you might not recognize any of these actors, but I mean, going back to, but when strangers appear, and then when you finally finish it, you're like, wow, that was like a crazy ride. But they didn't want to finish it. And I'm like, okay, fine. I get it. But I continue to watch movies like that. There was another, going back to Reservoir Dogs, you know, like back in 92 and 93, all these film festival winning films, you had to read a magazine, the Hollywood Reporter or the Variety. Oh, Reservoir Dogs and El Mariachi took Cannes, and they took Sundance. What the shit is Cannes and Sundance? I just go to Blockbuster. I just go to the movie theater, and then I go to Blockbuster.
So
when I was a kid, when I was 12, 13, 14, just renting, you know, movies nonstop at Blockbuster, I saw the trailer for Reservoir Dogs because Reservoir Dogs was bought by Live Entertainment. And so Live released all the B movies to VHS. So I would rent some movies, and then I'd see this, you know, trailer on, you remember VHSs, they'd have like four trailers before the movie. And they would show this trailer for Reservoir Dogs. And it looked like a B movie. So finally, I come around, I think it's 96. Oh, I think it was like 94, 95. Everyone's talking about Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And somehow people are talking about Reservoir Dogs. I'm like, I think I know that title. And I find it at Blockbuster. And I'm like, this is that movie I've been seeing in trailers for the last 4 years. Never pulled the trigger on watching it. I finally watch it. It's still today probably my top three Tarantino films, Reservoir Dogs.
It's a fantastic film, yeah.
Because back then that it would have been considered a B movie, but it wasn't. But it wasn't. It was an independent low budget film, just distributed the best way they could distribute it back then. Select theaters and then straight to VHS. So, you know, like going, but you know, all that, you know, that whole long tangent about B movies is just, you know, like you have to like kind of embrace that and realize you might not be making, you know, Marvel's Endgame every single time. You know, you might be making if you like, and if you like action, I keep bringing up this movie. It's on, I think it's still on Netflix. It's called Avengement with Scott Adkins, and it's one of those, you know, low budget British B movies, but the bar fight at the end is about 30 minutes long, nonstop. Guys just beating the ever living shit out of each other. And it's one of the sickest bar fights I've ever seen, ever made, ever shot. So, yeah. But what were you gonna say something? What were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say that I love watching like all the B movies, C movies, like just because they're innovative. Like I am a huge fan of like slasher films, old classic horror movies that nobody ever, everybody laughs at now. Like I love them because they're all practical effects and they're all just people using what they have to make something as realistic as possible. And like I respect that all the way. Like I'm all into practical effects. They're my favorite. And it just shows a level of innovation that I think is super important, and especially for indie filmmakers, because it's like you gotta get it done. And I love seeing the different innovative ways that all the like the B and C movies get it done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And going back to practical effects, I mean, for me, that's what I grew up with. It was not, you know, the Matrix was definitely revolutionary, but you know, you grow up with things like Indiana Jones and you know, even Star Wars with all the CGI that they were innovative with, a lot of that was still practical.
Oh yeah, all the
And
models.
oh geez, what else? You know, I also grew up with stuff, you know, like with the Predators and the Terminators and the Rambos. And the Rockies, and that's just all practical. And you know, and I mentioned this before. I always talk about Predator because Predator is a very confined, quarantine-esque movie. If you watch Predator, the first Predator with Schwarzenegger, you know, they land at the cat they land at that little, you know, forward operating base, and there's maybe four or five people on screen. And with the exception, they go to this Colombian cartel rebel camp, and there's like all the shootouts and the shit blowing up, and there's probably 30, 40 guys, and it's a big shootout and stuff like that. The whole rest of the movie is the team and the predator and that one female rebel, and each one systematically gets taken out. And by the time you're halfway mark of the film, it's just Schwarzenegger and a predator. That's like the ultimate independent, low budget, confined, huge blockbuster.
Oh, definitely.
Because it's bare bone minimal cast. It's just Schwarzenegger and the Predator. For 30 to 45 minutes, they're kind of stalking each other. And and so it goes going back to like the way people are making movies now, where it's very confined. And even before the quarantine, Ryan Reynolds did that movie, I think it was called Buried. Where he was buried alive, and they wanted him to release some sort of information or something. It was a terrorist plot or something like that. And it was the whole movie, the freaking guy's just buried in a coffin with a cell phone, and they pulled out a story. And but that was even pre-quarantine. And so like those are the ideas that, you know, like people need to be coming up with. But you
Definitely.
know, moving on from that, what's next on the agenda? What's the next set of plans, next set of goals, next on the agenda for Sarah Edmonds, let's say 6 months to a year from now?
I definitely want to get back into making films, even if it's just like gathering my friends together, small, like no budget things. Definitely want to get into making my own things. I want to get back into script writing because I have really been exclusively writing for page in the past year or so just because of school and all of that. But I definitely want to get back into script writing, get more involved with film community, and especially up here, because I don't know where I'm going to be after school, if I'm going to be going back to Maryland or if I'm going to be staying up here. It kind of just depends on work. But I feel like I haven't been as involved as I would like to be. And I know long term, I want to kind of haven't solidified a plan, but like my ultimate dream long term would be to find a way to create almost like a school or a set of classes for emerging filmmakers and writers to kind of like give them their bearing, maybe help them set up connections, because I mean, connections really do make the industry, no matter how like broad it gets, no matter how online it gets, it's really who you know helps a lot. And I definitely want to find a way to help people make those connections, whether it's through the magazine or through an actual type of class or school type thing. But yeah, I definitely just want to start making a community, getting more involved again, kind of starting new and creating is my goal long term.
Outstanding. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, if there was one last point, one last bit of advice you'd want to give, what few viewers I have, I don't have that many subscribers, but I'm working on it. But
We'll
one
get
point, we're going to get there. One last point of advice, one last bit of advice you'd want to give, put out there, what would that be?
Really just to reiterate kind of what we've been talking about is like not give up on your own work. Like you have to see it through. That's the first step to everything, no matter what it is. It's just find a way to see it through and everything else will happen later. Everything else you'll learn more, even if you make something and it goes nowhere, you will learn so much from that. Like I have so many projects that have gone nowhere, but I've learned so much and it's been great. Like I had a little animated project that I wanted to do that has not happened, but I learned how to do film scoring from that. So I made them did the music for another film by myself. So yeah, really just make sure you see their projects through and not to give up on your own work, because I think that's something that happens way too often.
Yeah. Okay. Outstanding. Well, Sarah Edmonds, I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing sharing your experiences and your stories with us. And let's put a little couple of let's get all the plugs out of the way first. Your literary magazine, your website. Well,
Yes.
let me see. I know I got your website for page and screen dot home dot blog. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a
Any,
WordPress site, so if
no,
you
that's
just look
fine.
up like for page and screen on WordPress, there you go. Yeah, only other plugs would just be like my own social media. It's literally just my name, Sarah E. Edmonds. So easy to remember, I hope.
Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr.
Yeah, Instagram and Twitter are the
Okay.
two that I've got.
Awesome.
Not Tumblr. I haven't done Tumblr since I had a horror blog in like 2016. So
I listen, like I told you, I suck at marketing, so I use every single one that's available, and I just, generally post all my stuff on every single platform, hoping to get one more subscriber. And the literary magazine, what is that? What's that called?
That's also for page and screen. It's
For page and
nestled
screen.
into the blog. It's
Okay.
the home page is just general. Then we have separate links to the blog. And on the blog, we also do reviews. So if anyone has any films or anything that they want reviewed, you can send it to us, send us a link, tiny bit about yourself, and then we'll read it, review it. I recently, it's not posted yet, but I recently did a review for The Last Conception, which is a film on Amazon. It's free on Amazon. It's hilarious. I love it so much. And there's a book about that I have not read, but I'm sure it's fine. But yeah, feel free to send us stuff to review. Then we have the magazine is nestled into that. All of the submission guidelines are there on the magazine page if anybody wants to send us stuff in. The deadline is technically the end of October, but I'm the one who goes through all of the emails that come from that. So if you miss the end of October deadline a little bit, just like mention where you heard about us and I might let it slide.
Okay, awesome. Well, Sarah, can't thank you enough for coming on. It was a joy to talk to you and hear all
Thanks for
your
having me.
thoughts and ideas. Absolutely, absolutely. Don't go anywhere. But we'll chat a little bit more offline.